They wonder, most men wonder why you don't get support from your wife. Why, you know, why does she feel like I'm doing this for me and not for the family? And if you've ever said that, like, I'm doing this for us, that's a sign. Like, that's a sign. Mm-hmm. The reason why is because there's no Super Bowl, there's no World Series. Mm-hmm. They don't have a vision, they don't have an end thing that they feel that they're a part of.
And working toward.
Yeah, and okay, working toward.
Makes sense.
Right? Yeah. Just like the entire team comes together and they practice and they eat right and they that level of commitment because they're working towards that World Series. If there's not a World Series that they feel a part of where the vision or the thing that you're building includes them, right? Then they're gonna feel like, well, why am I even doing this? And a lot of times they either step out, they serve divorce papers. Like, I have clients who are going through divorce right now because they didn't include their wife on the World Series.
All right, you guys, I have a very special guest. It's actually my good friend, Keston. And yeah, thank you for being here, man.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Yeah. So Keston, you're going to be speaking at our event December 6th and 7th.
Yes.
So tell me, what are you going to be talking about at the event?
So we're going to be talking primarily about a concept that I created called mind insurance. And mind insurance is simply a concept that helps entrepreneurs, leaders, CEOs protect their mind from crisis, mind crisis, and help them protect it so they could protect their mind, their money, and their marriage. Because if you can't protect your mind, then it affects your money, your marriage, and your mind, money, and marriage. So I help them protect their mind using a mind insurance policy.
All right. So how did you come up with that exactly? Because today, this is the first time you're actually sitting down and telling me in detail, like a little bit more about it, and where did you come up with it? How did it come about?
So the concept really came up when my wife and I, we had moved from New York to Atlanta. And we moved because her mom, she was diagnosed with leukemia. And we came to take care of her. So I left my job, I left everything, my family. It was a really tough move, but I felt like God was telling me, you guys need to move to Atlanta, go take care of your wife's mom. Mm-hmm. So when we got here, unfortunately, she passed after 3 months. Mm. And when we got here, we started doing wholesaling. We started like building the real estate business. And so I had started doing all of these new practices like journaling and writing my goals down and praying and like just doing all these morning routines, if you may. Mm-hmm. And when she passed, the morning she passed, I remember it clearly, she passed in our home. She was on hospice. I didn't want to do anything. I'm like, screw it. I was kind of upset at God too. It's like, man, you made us come all the way here for 3 months and then you take my wife's mom. And then I heard this voice, which is God, saying, hey, go do the things that you've been doing every day. So go do your routine. And this is in 2020. So COVID is still
COVID,
strong.
Yeah,
exactly. And so I was working out in my basement at the time. So I yielded to the voice. I said, all right, I'll go work out and I'll go journal and do all of the things. And so I worked out crying, like tears in my eyes, just trying to push through doing the things. After working out, I journaled. And it was in that moment when I started journaling and refocusing on what I was grateful for, what like just looking for all of the things, I felt better. It wasn't that my wife's mom didn't come back, but I felt a lot stronger. I felt like I had a purpose in my day. I felt like I knew what I needed to do. I was strong enough to be there for my wife and not just go down the pity party of, oh my God, she's gone. And when I was able to bounce back after doing all of my routines, I'm like, dang, that was like insurance. Like, it was like my mind insurance. And I just kind of said it out of nothing. And then every single time I would always, that was the last time I ever thought about giving up my morning routines and the things that I did. And so it protected me from myself when I wanted to quit or give up and all of that. Those routines protected me from myself. And so I created a concept after that, and I started to really get more structured with the framework after. And so I just called it Mind Insurance.
I love that, Mind Insurance. I really do.
Yeah.
So is it like a book or a process, or like, or is it something you teach? How is it?
It's a process. So
process.
Think about it like this, right? If you, let's think about it like regular insurance, because if you bought a car, you would say you got the Cybertruck. Let's say we're going for the new Cybertruck again, right? You would, in the dealership, you would say, hey, Geico, or whoever you do insurance with, like, I'm buying a new Tesla. They would say, okay, great.
Yeah.
What type of Tesla? You'd say Cybertruck. And they would say, great. What type of Cybertruck? Is it the Beast? Is it the whatever, right? And so you tell them, they'll ask you how many miles you're going to drive. They'll ask you what color it is. They'll ask you all of these details that then allows them to say, okay, based on this car, this is what your premium is going to be.
So it's customized.
Exactly.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay.
And so entrepreneurs, what they don't do every day is they don't have a specific goal or thing that they want to do, or they map out, so your vision.
All right, so we're interrupting the podcast real quick to tell you about a giveaway that me and Keston are going to be giving away. Make sure to go to our Instagram, like the photo of me and Keston, tag two friends, and tell us why you should win the giveaway. Keston, what are we giving away?
Shane, we're going to be giving away a 30-minute consultation where I'm going to help you if you experience procrastination problems, if you got discipline problems, even if you have imposter syndrome, any type of struggle that you have and you need clarity to break through to the next level, I'm your guy.
Now let's get back to the podcast.
What's your big vision? And plus, what's your vision for today? Because every time you write down your goals or you write down your schedule, it's like having a vision for the day, right?
That's right.
And if you don't have that, it increases your procrastination. It decreases your motivation. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a vision or you don't know what you're working towards. And that was one of the big things when it comes to this insurance policy thing. The first thing that you need to have is that vision. What's the vision that you need? And it's very similar to like the application process for your insurance. And it has to be detailed because entrepreneurs, they're like, well, I want to do real estate. And it's like, great. What type of real estate? Right.
Because there's many.
Exactly. Do you want to do lease options? Do you want to do multifamily? Yeah. Do you want to wholesale? Do you want to? And when they just get in, it's like, well, I'm not really sure. And so they try doing everything that's shiny that people can make money from. And then I've seen thousands of people quit. The reason why they quit is because they were never specific as to what strategy they want to be able to utilize. And so with the mind insurance policy, to insure your mind so that you don't join or get into real estate and quit, you got to be specific as to what strategy you're going to use to. And so it's creating the vision.
I gotcha.
And once you create the vision, going back to the insurance, once you tell them exactly what type of car you have, then they say, well, this is your premium, $5,000 a month.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, your premium, you then decide, man, I can't really afford that. Or, okay, cool. And the premium is the price that you pay, right?
Okay, I gotcha.
And most people, because they don't have a clear vision, they're not willing to pay the price to get to their goals. And so if you want to learn multifamily, well, the premium that you pay is very different than if you want to get started in wholesaling.
That's right.
The type of mentors you need, the type of education you need, the community you need, all
these
different.
Even the way you source, the way exactly. you negotiate, yeah.
Exactly. There's a higher premium getting into multifamily, but someone who just want to get into real estate and haven't assessed the cost because they don't know, they don't have a clear vision, they get started and then they get discouraged, but they get discouraged to me at the wrong time because you haven't assessed. It could all be avoidable, right?
That's right.
And so I take people through that process, and that's just two steps out of four steps that I take people through so that they could have clarity in knowing, am I gonna buy this car or not? Could I afford a Lamborghini? Right?
Yeah.
If I can't, then I'm not gonna do it. If I can't make the monthly payments, if I'm not willing to give up my old habits, if I'm not willing to sacrifice some family time, like what are you willing, are you willing to pay the price to achieve that goal?
Mm-hmm. So you went, you had a deep loss, but you still had to work. Right?
Yes.
And you were dealing with grief, of course, from the loss. And then you're kind of angry with God a little bit this time.
Yeah.
And then this was creative. And it, what it did is it kind of made you drop all of that and kind of focus directly on what you needed to do.
Correct. On what I needed to do, but also it gave me the clarity to get through the fog.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Because when people pass or things happen, there's this fog that come up where you're
you
feel kind of lost. Yeah. And if God didn't think that was enough, in 2021, in the beginning of 2021, my wife and I, we had a miscarriage. By the end of 2021, my mom was diagnosed with lung cancer.
God, like back to back. It's crazy.
But by the time we got to my mom, I was smiling through it. Because I had already had the formula down as to what to do to get through difficult things, but still be focused on achieving my goals.
Yes. Yeah.
And so the Mind Insurance formula helped me through all of those things where it was like the typical person, they would quit, they would stop, they would say, oh my God, life is lifing, all of the things. But because I insure my mind every single day, I'm able to go through very tough things and, come out on the other side.
Man, that's amazing. So how long have you been actually kind of helping and mentoring other people using Mind Insurance?
For the past 3 years.
And do you have a lot, 3 years. I bet it's changed a lot of people's lives.
Thousands.
How does it make you feel, Keston?
So it's the most fulfilling thing I've ever done. I always say I've done deals where I've gotten over $500,000 in one deal. Right? And it's like, you think you're doing this business for money, but after you've gotten the money, maybe 30 minutes, an hour later, you start thinking, dang, I got to do this again.
Yeah.
Right? You start thinking about what's next. At least that's how I think as an entrepreneur. I'm like, okay, how do we make more money?
What's the next thing?
Exactly. When I help somebody overcome their trauma, overcome their limiting beliefs, overcome like light bulb shifting beliefs, the fulfillment from that, not even a big check, makes me feel half as good as seeing somebody transform.
Yeah. Well, another thing too, even for those that are not going through traumatic experience, just someone that's lazy and stuff.
Yeah.
I think Mind Insurance could help them with that. It's just the process to actually get started.
Exactly.
Like a jump start. And
exactly. It's really for anyone. It's really for anyone, and anyone could apply it. I prefer to work with more successful people who are stuck somewhere and they're already going. I like to say you should have your car already in drive versus in park.
I like that.
Because if you're in park, I can't push you. Like, I'm not going to try to get you to change the gear and all that, right?
Yeah.
So, but if you're in neutral or you're in drive and you're already rolling, I could help you.
Push you in the right direction.
Exactly.
I like that.
Exactly. So it's while it's for all, the people who are already kind of moving, that's the people I love helping.
That's amazing. All right. So, Kes, I want to know a little bit more, too. So,
yeah,
you're not from Georgia originally.
No.
Where are you from? Tell us a little back history about you, by the way.
Yeah, so originally I'm from Trinidad and Tobago. That's where I'm from. We migrated here to the U.S. in 2002.
2002.
So it's almost 22 years.
Wow, yeah. Okay.
22 years. And, you know, when we got here, I started cleaning my church. That was the first kind of job I had to help my parents. Did demolition in construction, handing out flyers for restaurants, like anything to help my parents to help them make ends meet.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just continued through that. And I remember when I was in college, my teacher told me that, he's like, man, I want to help you. Do you have a student visa? I said, yeah, I got a student visa. I said, so I'll give you a job. And this was, I was in the, I was into this, doing like video editing and all that type of stuff.
Okay, yeah. I didn't know that.
That's what I went to school for.
You could have helped us set up all this today.
I could.
Okay.
And after 2 weeks, man, he said, hey, Keston, I want to talk to you. Let's come into the office. So I get into the office. He's like, sit down. He said, you can't work here anymore. So what do you mean? He said, your visa isn't one that allows you to work.
Oh,
so I'm sorry, you wouldn't be able to work here. Broke my heart. Because up until that point, I've been doing all of the hard work and demolition and construction and just everything. And this was my first legal job, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And it broke my heart. And so when I gave him back the badge, I remember making a vow to myself saying that I will never, ever, one day in my life, be lazy once I get my Social Security papers.
Mm.
And that vow kind of just went on. So I remember when I got my papers, 2 months after that, I started working for Apple. Then I started working for Macy's corporate. I was actually the IT guy for the CEO of Macy's.
Wow.
For quite some time. Then I started working on Wall Street at a law firm. Got promoted.
Wow. You went through. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Got promoted from being a help desk guy to being a engineer.
Mm-hmm.
So went being an engineer to a cybersecurity engineer. And that was the job that I ended up leaving in 2020. I was a cybersecurity engineer because I knew that there was more to life. And it was just around the same time that God was like, hey, I need you guys to go to Atlanta.
Hmm.
So I took a severance package from my job. And, you know, they gave us 6 months. I told my wife, I said, I could figure out real estate in 6 months. And left a multi-six-figure job. And said, done.
What made you choose real estate to figure out?
So I did like some studies and it kind of just looked like all very wealthy people ended with real estate.
Yeah.
And I'm like, babe, why not just go where people end? Right. So if we could be a solution provider to the people.
Exactly. Yeah, I like that.
So that was my logic. And so we just jumped in head first, man. And within the first 6 months, we wholesaled 1.5 times my six-figure salary.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and
here in Atlanta.
In Atlanta.
That's amazing.
Yeah, here in Atlanta. In 2021, we went from 1 to 21 doors, just kind of using other people's money and all creative deals.
Mm-hmm.
In 2022, that's when we did our first million in business. And we got into multifamily. So now, come all the way now, we have a $10 million real estate portfolio.
That's crazy. So when you say we, you mean you and your wife?
My wife and I, yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, okay. All right, so tell us, how was your first deal? So for those that are listening, some of these guys haven't even done a deal.
Yeah.
I always talk about, even in my conferences, my first deal, because I get to relive how I felt, not knowing what was going on. Tell me about your first wholesale deal. How was it?
Dude, my first wholesale deal was amazing. Mm-hmm. I could see the lady's name. I could see the lady. I can't remember her name.
Mm-hmm.
But we had this seller who her husband had passed away. And so she wanted to sell her house. It was in McDonough, McDonough, Georgia. And so, you know, drove down to McDonough, go see the house and take pictures and all that type of stuff. And when we wholesaled that deal, it was $1,200.
$1,200.
It was $1,200. But here's the interesting thing.
Uh-huh.
It was $1,200 to split with 4 people.
Oh, wow.
And it felt like $1,000,000.
Yeah.
Like, because I was like, this is real. This is real.
It works.
I could do it again. Yes. Yeah. It felt like $1,000,000. And
Can you explain what wholesaling is for those that don't know?
So wholesaling is essentially when you, it's like Tinder for real estate, where you have someone who wants to sell their house, then you have someone who wants to buy a house, and you're in the middle of being the matchmaker, where you get the property, you get a contract with the property. You don't need to buy the property to have it on the contract. So you get this contract that says, hey, I am going to purchase this house from you. And you find a flipper or someone who wants to add value to that property. Mm-hmm. And you kind of just swap. You sell the contract for more. So if I get the contract from the seller for, let's say, $15,000, I could sell it to the buyer for $20,000.
And then they'll go fix it.
They'll fix it and then put it on the market for $50,000, right?
So,
and you know, these are small numbers just for whoever is listening to understand, but that was wholesaling.
So what was your biggest win in wholesaling? I don't do much wholesaling.
Yeah.
So what's your biggest win in wholesaling?
We did a $50,000 deal. This was a property in Woodstock. $50,000, same situation, husband passed. You know, being able to, I remember negotiating that deal because we were gonna get $25,000 for this deal. It's not bad, right? And when I went to the property and I walked the property, it was, there was like a raccoon. I remember so many things because it was boarded up and I had to get in. And so like I'm walking over so much junk and stuff and this raccoon almost chased me. I'm like, I was scared out of my bazoozas. And so after the walk into the property and seeing how much work that it required, I'm like, I'm going to renegotiate this deal. And it was the first time I needed to have courage to go back and renegotiate.
While it's under contract.
While it's under contract. Uh-huh. And I remember the lady saying clearly to me, she's like, is this where you really need to be? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, okay. She said, it wasn't even a fight. She said, okay, no problem.
Yeah.
Only because of the way you've treated me and my daughter in this process, I'm gonna do this. I'm doing this for you, not for anything else. That's and I was amazing. Like, wow. Just because of the relationship and the rapport that we built, she was cool giving me a whole, what
gave us, exactly. Oh my gosh.
It's like, it's nuts.
Yeah, so one thing you said I thought was pretty, most wholesalers kind of come in very transactional, pushy and mean, and then they, I kind of feel like a lot of wholesalers give a bad name to investing, don't you think?
Yeah.
But you took at it from a different angle.
I'm a people person, man.
I can tell.
Yeah.
Look at that smile. Look at that smile.
I'm a people person. Yeah. I like connecting. And so when I, in doing sales, I always say I'm a terrible negotiator. I'm a terrible salesperson because of, like, I don't like just going in to do the typical stuff, give me the timeline, your motivation and all of that. Mm-hmm. Like I spend a little bit longer on the phone, but the connection that I make, I'm probably gonna get the contract from anybody else because of the the type of rapport that I make with sellers. So
that's awesome. Yeah.
I love talking to people. I love understanding. And I've talked to thousands of sellers at this point. And I always ask them, like, why are you not genuinely, why are you not selling this to your family? Mm-hmm. You know, and one of the things that I learned from them, or I assume based on just speaking to so many, is that one of the main reasons why they don't sell to their family is because their family seen them working so hard that they want nothing to do with the level of work because it kept them away from their family.
It's a good way to put it, actually. Yeah.
It's almost true. Like they see when they were coming up, they had to work so hard, they didn't have time for the daughter or the son. And so now they just don't want anything to do with it because real estate represents, I have to work so hard, I'm not going to be able to spend time with my family. And just after talking to so many of them, man, they express kind of like they regretted not spending time with, you know, their family. And so now they want to go back and try to make up for lost time, and which is very hard, you know, to do. But anyway, tangent.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, another thing is, so do you do a lot of wholesaling now, or are you trying to do more buy and holds, or what are you working on?
So I don't wholesale at all now. And that's not actually true. I would wholesale if somebody comes to me and is like, hey, do you know somebody who would buy this deal? And I would get something in the transaction.
But you're not actively sourcing, trying to...
No.
Okay.
I actually really hate wholesaling.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, to everyone who, you know, it helped me. It helped me come up. It helped me with my belief. Mm-hmm. But wholesaling is one of the only businesses in the world that doesn't retain a customer.
That's right.
Right. And to have a successful business, you need to be able to retain a customer and sell them something again. Mm-hmm. And wholesaling, you're unable to
it's
do
one
that.
And done,
it's a one and done game. And so you're always looking for a new customer. And in the world of business, that's a terrible business to have because you're always hunting for a new customer.
You got to repeat it over and over and over again.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, so like once I started understanding business a lot more, I'm like, well, this is a terrible business to have just because of that one principle and not being able to resell. You look at Apple, they resell their customers over and over and over and over. They sell them different products. And
it looks like the same iPhone. I don't know what you don't need that. It does.
It does. But we have a Mac, we have a watch, we have an Apple TV, we have like all these different things.
iPads,
yeah. Exactly. And so they sell different products to their same customers. And that's what I mean by being able to resell. And we still buy their phones, right? It's kind of crazy.
So no wholesaling. So what are you working on now? Are you doing fix and flips or are you doing buy and holds?
I do fix and flips, not because I love it. The last fix and flip I got into was because I could. And it was such a bad idea. Like, I won't tell you right now. Such a bad idea. I have a private money lender who's had money with me for the last 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Okay. In a deal. And he one day was like, hey, man, emergency came up. I need to pay off. I need my money. Mm. And I'm like, well, I don't want to take money from my coaching business to pay him off. So, and I'm not like actively heavy in real estate right now. I got my rentals and all that. So let me just do a flip, right? And I'm like, let me do a flip. I'll be able to pay them off. And, you know, I got a team. They're going to do an amazing job. We'll be in and out in 3 months. Well, it's going on 6. And I still have the flip going on now. Matter of fact, it's a terrible time. We just passed the elections and it's
Christmas time.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a terrible time to have a flip going on right now.
It is.
We were supposed to be out 3 months ago or 4 months ago, but we're 20,000 over. Like, it's just.
Fix and flips are stressful.
Oh, my goodness, dude.
Yeah. You going to keep doing them?
No. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Yeah. So we're refinancing. We're refining to pay off all of our lenders. And then I might either do a lease option. Let's put somebody in there and, you know, let them buy it off of me. Buy it if they're able to qualify and do what they need to do. Mm. Or I might just sell the LLC because I created a new LLC. I might just sell the LLC to a local investor in the area or something like that. So
okay,
I'm going to get out of it somehow. But yeah, I got to get creative with it now.
Yeah, man. Oh, man. I really don't like fix and flips. I really don't. But I mean, they make good money if you do it.
Exactly.
But you got to, it's same like wholesaling, you got to do it all the time.
Yeah.
And then you got to do it with contractors. And
exactly.
But you have a good network of contractors, I think.
Right? I do. And, you know, we've done a fair amount of fix and flips. Mm-hmm. And I've done a lot of virtual fix and flips and stuff like that. But this one, it's almost like you try to have the last dance and they're like, oh, we're going to get him on this last one. So I just smile with it, man. You know, and just, I always say, God, thank you for the opportunity to grow. You know,
Right. So wholesaling, you don't do.
No.
Fix and flip, you're like, that's my last draw.
Yeah.
So it's buy and holds mainly.
Buy and holds mainly.
So what are you buying and holding? Commercial, residential, multifamily? What is it?
So we have a portfolio of 50 doors right now, which that includes some multifamily and single family.
Amazing.
And you know, talking to you, we've talked about some commercial stuff.
We want you to do that. Yeah, that'd be great.
I want to do commercial stuff. And so I'm eventually going to sell a bunch of the things that I have to be able to just park my money in commercial real estate. Triple net commercial real estate, because multifamily is commercial real estate, but triple net commercial real estate, because I'm a lazy investor. I prefer to have people take care of everything versus be responsible for all of the operations and the partnerships and all of the different things. With a triple net lease, that's minimal.
Right? Yeah, explain what a triple net lease is for everyone.
Yeah, so triple net lease is where your tenant takes care of everything. They take care of the taxes, they take care of all the maintenance, they take care of the insurance, they take care of everything on the property, which makes it such a beautiful deal.
It does.
Yes, you know, and so that's now my focus. And, you know, I was talking to Tim, he's showing me like some deals that you guys may have in the pipeline and things like that. And I honestly think that people who are already like coming out of the 9-to-5 jobs and they work for a lot of money. So like doctors, lawyers, that type of thing. I think that's the best asset class for them to be in.
It really is.
Because they won't have to be as hands-on.
That's right. Yeah, because single family multifamily is usually 12-month leases, right? You got to do repairs and maintenance. They'll call you from a toilet. But in triple net, they do everything. Yeah. Taxes, insurance, repairs, maintenance. You work really hard to find one tenant. And then for every 15 years, 10 years, 15 Jesus, years, so much easier. So it's good. How old are you, man?
38.
I'm 37. So we're getting old, aren't we, man? So we want those easier kind of tenants, you know?
Dude, I told my wife that I'm never turning 40, by the way. I'm going down Benjamin
Button
style.
I think that's good. So I'll go to 36.
Exactly. Go to 37, I'm going right back
down. Let's do that. I like that. Justin gets it.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, man, I'm not interested in the complex operations and all that stuff anymore. So,
do you do any stocks or anything like that, or are you just all real estate?
I've been all real estate business. On I've had a few other businesses, Amazon, coaching.
I didn't know
business.
You did Amazon. Okay.
Yeah, when I met my wife, I was doing Amazon.
All right, so name all the type of business ventures you've been in again. Okay, so you did Amazon.
Yeah, I've done Amazon. I've done, I've tried to do cars, like having rental cars.
Oh, like Turo kind of stuff?
Yeah, like Turo kind of things. Mm-hmm. I've done, I've ventured into credit repair to some degree. Mm-hmm. What else have I done? If my wife was here, she would be like, you've done this, you've done that. We've done like t-shirt making company.
Oh, like screen printing or something.
Yeah, we've done
screen printing. And it never just sticks, but real estate's that thing that just like...
Well, that's the thing that I committed to fully.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's no quitting on this. I'm burning all the boats. See, when I did a lot of those other businesses, well, the Amazon business is interesting. The Amazon business, I intentionally quit, and I had gotten this business to 30K a month in 4 months.
Well, that's good. You knew it. Yeah.
I was learning it, but as God was good, I just keep making things happen. So that was the same time I met my wife. So when we started dating, I knew she was the one for me because she had a lot of gifts and talent. She was a great graphic designer. And so when I had my product on Amazon, I was selling these pest repellers, right? So you plug it in and it repels cockroaches, mosquitoes, that type of thing, right?
Pretty good.
And I would source these from China and I just wanted to get started. And so I just kept the box that they had and everything. So I was making a ton of money, but I don't even know why. I was just following the process of my mentors.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I met my wife, she was great with designing. So she helped me repackage the box and put new graphics. And it was beautiful, man. I'm like, oh my God.
And that was attractive to you.
Oh, right? Dude. I'm like, well, let's get married. We got married within like 6 months from me meeting her.
That's amazing.
So then in that business continued to go on. I started putting demands on her. And one day I heard her say, like, dude, this is not my dream. I didn't ask for this. Mm-hmm. And her saying that made me, like, it was almost as if the world stopped, time stopped, and made me reflect on the person who gave me back my ring before her after being together for 5 years. Mm-hmm. Very similar. She said something very similar, right? Where mm-hmm. my grind and my ambition, the things that I was going after, mm-hmm. it's like, hey, this isn't what I want to do. But at that point in time, I'm like, well, peace, I'm out, right? My ex-wife, something very similar. And I'm like, dude, hold on. Different people, same sentiment. Thing. I'm the common denominator
here.
And so long story short, it made me quit my Amazon business. Because I'm like, I'm not getting a divorce again. I'm not going through, like, something's wrong with me. And I wanted to focus on becoming a better man and also understanding what this whole marriage, relationship, giving to becoming one thing really meant. Mm-hmm. And so for 2.5 years, I did no business, but focus on my marriage, focus on my wife,
that's beautiful, focus actually. On
coaching and all mm-hmm. that we did.
Yeah.
Counseling, all of the things. And that's what really transformed me, man. Because I didn't want to lose my marriage again.
Right. So I just got married last weekend, right? You came to my wedding.
Yeah.
I appreciate you being there. What advice would you give to, I guess, a newlywed, I guess, a new husband that wants to give 100% to his wife, but still balance things well, business-wise, friends, my other family, and everything? What can you teach?
So, would you play in the NFL if there was not a Super Bowl?
The bad thing is I don't know much about what a Super Bowl is. I don't know the football.
Gotcha.
I don't know the football. Super Bowl is like the World Series?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe?
Yeah.
So you know World Series, you know baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So what's baseball's Super Bowl?
That'd be
World Series.
World Series.
The World Series.
Okay, yeah.
So, and that's...
I guess you'd have to enjoy it, right? Just enjoy the game, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
But would you play in the series if there was no World Series?
Possibly not, I guess. You got to have an end goal, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And so my advice to men is exactly that. Most men wonder why you don't get support from your wife, why does she feel like I'm doing this for me and not for the family? And if you've ever said that, like, I'm doing this for us, that's a sign. Like, that's a sign. Mm-hmm. The reason why is because there's no Super Bowl. There's no World Series. Mm-hmm. They don't have a vision. They don't have an end thing that they feel that they're a part of.
And working toward.
Yeah, and working towards.
That makes sense.
Right?
Yeah.
Just like the entire team comes together and they practice and they eat right and they that level of commitment because they're working towards that World Series. If there's not a World Series that they feel a part of where the vision or the thing that you're building includes them, right? Mm-hmm. Then they're gonna feel like, well, why am I even doing this? And a lot of times they either step out, they serve divorce papers. Like, I have clients who are going through divorce right now because they didn't include their wife on the World Series.
That's neat, because when you were talking earlier, I had to get you to clarify. You said, we have 10 million.
Yeah.
We have 52. I said, is that a partner or is your wife? And he said, my wife. So just like that.
Yeah. That's how I have buy-in to do anything. Mm-hmm. You know, like my wife and I, we picked up and moved to Tennessee. We moved here. We do this, we do that. And the reason why is because there's a World Series that we're going for, and while we may have different routes, she supports it.
That's
because
amazing.
She knows what we're working towards.
Yeah, so I went and met with Grant Cardone and talked about business, and then I made sure to go see Elena.
Yeah.
And she told me something pretty neat. And if you can tell by what she shows and talks about building an empire, she talks about her and him building an empire. Yeah. Very similar. You know, she's got to be part of it and see the end goal. And her goal is her and Grant are going to build an empire.
Yeah.
So what have you and her sat down and said, honey, we're building what? What is y'all's World Series or Super Bowl?
So I have this, mm-hmm. and it's written all on my, I have it written. It's in my office. Mm-hmm. And so essentially we're building a life where we're able to, of course you have the vanity things, right? The houses, the cars, the all of that. But it's really a life where we're able to allow our marriage to be a godly marriage that people look to, and we help and inspire others to learn how to live a godly, fun marriage and life while building an empire through real estate, through business, through speaking, through like all those types of things. Mm. And having friends that we could connect with and that's on a similar path. And so it's really more about our lifestyle than a particular thing. There is the thing where I call it the Burj Khalifa, right? Like we all have that big thing that we all want. And, and for me, I call it the Peloton of personal development.
Okay.
I'm building a personal development company that I want to be exactly like Peloton of personal development. And so while building that, we have different avenues and things that we do to sustain us so that we could just focus on helping people in their marriage and their with money, with their mind and just different.
So she's aspects. Involved in everything, real estate and the coaching and everything.
She's my COO.
That's amazing.
Yeah, she's my COO.
I'm going to jump to something that you keep mentioning. God, how did you get saved? Tell me your story.
so my parents are pastors.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, my parents
and
are
I'm
pastors.
I'm learning a lot today, Kest. Okay. So, yeah, okay.
And so I don't even know if Tim knew that. Yeah. My parents are pastors and
in New York
in New York, right?
Okay, yeah.
And so they weren't always pastors, but I grew up in church. And so me growing up in church didn't mean that I was always in church because I lived the stereotypical, I'm that pastor's kid.
I'm free. Yeah,
I am that pastor's kid. Like the life that I used to live was crazy. And so I also used to DJ.
Okay.
And as a DJ, we were international DJs that had a really big reputation. So we played around the world. Wow. In Spain, we played in Switzerland and China. Like we played all around the world, and in Japan. Sorry, not China. When God told me it was time to stop, I didn't want to stop, and so He made things happen that He just kind of pulled it from me,
like a Jonah in the well.
Yeah,
kind of
exactly.
Okay, yeah.
And I stopped, and this was in 2017, I believe.
Okay.
When He kind of pulled it from me, and that's what made me kind of start focusing and just surrender, and I started my journey of really seeking Him and understanding what it really meant to be a go-giver, to be somebody that gives to the world versus take. Because I was a really selfish person, didn't smile at all. I just lived a really opposite life to who I am today. And most people will not believe it for anything.
Well, that's what God will do, change that life.
And that's one of the reasons why I do think that even in who I am today, I know God has kind of taken me through that journey to be able to help people who has been where I've been so that I could help them get to this path. Mm-hmm. And so my relationship with God really, my personal relationship with God really started in 2017-ish. Okay. Always knew him, was always God-fearing, always prayed. Even when I was going to do something that was totally wrong, I would say, yeah. God, you gotta protect me. You know what I'm about to do is wrong, but you gotta hold me down here. I was always God-fearing. But my real personal relationship, I'll tell you how he arrested me. He arrested me, the young lady who gave me back my ring. Mm-hmm. That happened in 2017 or 2016. 2 days after that, I had to get surgery on my foot. I had bunion surgery. Mm. And I was going to be off of my feet for 3 months.
Oh, wow.
So I call it my bed season, where when all of these things happen and God arrested me, a couple of weeks, like a few days after my ex-fiance gave me back my ring. And I this is where he dealt with a lot of my addictions to women, to sex, pornography, all of the things, man. I just kind of gave it all to him. I just surrendered it all. And one of the things that most people tell me I'm crazy, but I called a meeting with my family, my parents and my two sisters, and I told them exactly who I was, because they had no idea who I really was, right? We have a concept of who our parents believe we are, and then we have the truth. And I was living the opposite of what they really believed. And they knew that they knew me as a DJ and all that. They just didn't know what I did as a DJ. Right? So I just kind of came clean and just told them. And the reason why I did that was because I knew I wanted to be more vulnerable with my life, and they needed to know who I was first before I started to share the things that I've struggled with and the things that I did to be able to get to this side. So I shared it with them first. And once, we got past that, then I couldn't care less who else knew, and just shared it with the world after that.
That's amazing. You know, the Bible says, "What, confess your sins one to another," you know?
Yeah.
So that's what you did. You went to your brethren.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, man. So that was very, felt empty after that. And I was just from that moment on, I was on a path of just really figuring out how I could add more value to the world, how I could serve instead of take. I felt like I was a taker.
Yeah. Now you give.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's what Jesus will do.
Exactly.
That's amazing. So I want you to tell me a little bit. I'm going to close this, actually. Yeah. I want you to tell me, I know you had a little daughter.
Yeah, man.
Tell us about her.
So my little princess, Esme.
She's beautiful, by the way.
Dude, thank you. Yeah. She is the most beautiful human being. Mm-hmm. And people always, they would say, oh man, wait till you have a daughter. You know, it's going to soften you up and all that type of stuff. And to some degree, that's true. But what I've learned from having my daughter, and I have a 14-year-old son as well. Mm-hmm. But from having her, for some reason, I started appreciating my wife even more. And with my son, we had a scheduled C-section. So he showed up, I was able to cut his navel string, all of the things, but it was very quick.
Yeah.
With my wife, she had a natural birth, and just going through the entire process with her and just really understanding how a woman body really does all the thing that it does. And the level of appreciation for women just went through the roof, especially my wife. And that is symbolized in this beautiful princess that I have now,
man. Baby.
And so the love and appreciation I have for her, Esme, my daughter, it's something like I've never had before. It's different, but also the love I have for my wife, for the process and everything. It's just, it's like another level of love that I don't know how else I could express it by not going through something like that.
So you have one of each, a boy and a girl.
I do.
And honestly, I can tell by everything you're saying, it seems like, of course, family, and then having your kids, does that make you want to be more disciplined to accomplish what you and your wife are trying to do as a team?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. They are definitely a motivator. Mm-hmm. I can't say they are the motivators, but they're like how I live is so important because as humans, we pattern what we see more than what we're told.
Yeah.
And so my discipline as to who I am, what I do, all of those things is so important that my family and my son and my daughters see it exemplified versus me telling them something that I'm not doing. Mm. I want them to say like, oh, I seen my dad do that, and let them pick up the habits that I have versus me saying, hey, go clean your room, but my room is dirty. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's the, let them pick up the habits they see more than what you tell them. And I think life would be a lot easier for, it'd be easier if my parents did the same.
Yeah, by example.
By example, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so family is, my wife, family is just the most important thing to me. And the reason why is because, and how I frame it for entrepreneurs is like, if you lose your family, do you still consider yourself to be successful? A lot of times the answer is no, right? They'll be heartbroken. Life is going to suck. And so for me, I put the most important thing. And if you want to know what's important to someone, look at their calendar.
Yeah.
You know, and so how do you schedule family time? How do you schedule date nights? Like all those things. You're newly married, right?
How do you balance all that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, really important. And that's what I find the most joy in doing now is helping entrepreneurs and leaders find that work-life integration, because I feel like integration works a lot better than balance from the standpoint where I believe in giving 100% to everything. Mm-hmm. But if your family is integrated into what you're doing, they wouldn't feel like, oh, their daddy goes working again.
Yeah.
They'll be more like, oh, I know daddy's working, but I know I'm going to get my time at this time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It optimizes everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, so my son, when he was here, he did sales calls for me.
That's awesome.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's integration. He enjoyed doing sales calls. He got to make some money. And so now it's more of a, hey, dad, how could we make more money together kind of thing versus like,
oh, man,
you're always working.
So he's 14, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about him. What kind of person is he right now? Is he a shy guy? Extrovert? I'm an introvert. Is he extrovert, introvert? Is he just like you? How is he?
He acts like an introvert, but he's really an extrovert.
Yeah, yeah.
When you look at him in school and stuff like that, man, his personality is so loud.
Mm.
It's so loud. And I love it because I think he's exactly like me, where he is a extrovert, introvert, where he gets joy from doing very specific things. And if he's not doing those things, he's very quiet.
Yeah.
For me, when I'm speaking, when I'm doing these types of things, I'm very extroverted because I enjoy sharing information.
Mm.
But other than that, I'm introverted because I'm learning.
Yes.
And so I seem quiet. I'm an observer. Like, I love observing people, paying attention.
Absorbing everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's my vibe.
So is he growing up with the mind insurance mindset?
He absolutely is.
Yeah.
He absolutely is, man. And man, we had one of the most beautiful conversations over the weekend where he shared some of the most vulnerable things with me. And I always teach him about like emotional intelligence and being able to understand that most adults just don't have a very high emotional intelligence. They really
That's
don't.
True. That's true.
And so just teaching him what that is, teaching him how to be able to balance and manage his and why. And so I'm very logical when I give him examples as to how to do it, what to do.
Yeah.
So he feels really, really empowered. I tell him it's a superpower. And so I think that's one of the reasons why he's good at sales, because of some of the teachings and things that I've been teaching him for a long time now.
That's amazing. So I do have another question. Since you're going to be there December 6th and 7th, are we going to be able to meet your son? Are you going to bring your princess, the wife, everybody?
My princess will definitely be there. I'm not sure if December 6th, I'm not sure if I'm going to get him out of school.
Maybe the 7th.
Saturday.
We'll get you there Saturday.
Okay.
Too. Okay.
Yeah. That could possibly work then.
Can you tell everyone where they can find you online?
Yes. If you're looking for me, Tess on Purpose on Instagram or LinkedIn. Those are the easiest ways to get in contact with me. Tess on Purpose.
Yeah. And we're going to put his username and everything in the bio. You guys make sure to check him out. Follow him and tell him that you saw him on this podcast so that he'll know where we came from. And man, we're super excited. We hope a ton of people come out and see you. Thanks for being on here with me, man.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Keston.
Appreciate it.